Welcome to a brand new series of York Hospital Ball. This is series 14, a series all about cult heroes who have played for the mighty Minstermen. To kick us off, this week's guest is Ian Blackstone, a late starter in football. Ian's journey into professional football was not the traditional path, but his time at Booth and Crescent left a mark with supporters. From his hat-trick at Wrexham to playing at Wembley, Blackie was always popular with the fans, so much so that he was one of the club's first ambassadors. This episode is sponsored by regular sponsors, the nearly departed app for iPhone. We are delighted to have them back with us this series. If you travel by train, you need Nearly Departed. Whether you're traveling to work or an away game, Nearly Departed will help you get there by showing live updates for your train service. The app has been carefully made by a York City supporter and is available in the Apple App Store. So download Nearly Departed today and then enter the offer code York, O-R-K, inside the app to get the first 6 months usage free. For now, here is Series 14, Episode 1 with the brilliant Ian Blackstone.
So first of all, Ian, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you at the Trust Social events this season. So this interview is a chance to sort of explore some of those brilliant stories as well as ask you some sort of new questions, really. I think many people know that you didn't turn pro until you were 25, but what I thought was even more unusual, having spoken to you this season, was tell me that you didn't play football properly till you were about 20, and even then it was alongside kind of smoking a few cigs and stuff like that. So tell us about your kind of journey into football.
Well, I obviously played football as a child, and I played for a school team, but I stopped playing football at 13 and maybe didn't kick a ball till I was like 19 or 20. And I only started playing football for pub side because of my drinking habit. So I had maybe half a season with a friend in Bradford because I grew up in Bradford and Harrogate. And then I moved back to Harrogate and I wasn't playing football, but all my friends who I drank with played for this pub that we drank in, so I then started playing Sunday football aged maybe 20.
And you must have been so much better than everyone else, were you?
Well, I was
particularly if you were all drunk. And
I was drunker than all of them, so but I back then, like I've said to you previously, I used to probably drink 8 pints every night and smoke 40 fags a day, because that was from 13, that was the path I took, was smoking, drinking and being young and stupid, and football never entered my world of anything other than the fact that where I came back to live in Harrogate, my friends played football for the Prince of Wales in Starbeck, so I played for the Prince of Wales in Starbeck.
And you say about football wasn't kind of on the agenda, but your dad was quite a good footballer, wasn't he? So obviously he must have had some influence there.
Yeah, Kenneth was very well known locally for all sorts of reasons, and football was one of them. But yeah, it was good. He played at Knaresborough Town, a bit of railway, but it was more Knaresborough Town, and yeah, a really prolific goal scorer in his day.
And you played in a non-league for likes of Harrogate Railway, Halifax, Harrogate Town, and people starting to come and watch you play. One of those was John Bird, who happened, I think, to see you score a hat-trick. So was that a sort of sliding doors moment then? Had he not come to watch that particular game, your career might have had a different path?
As you know, there's several people, and one of them, bless him, has died last week, and there was a fella called Bob Hunter, who was very well known in Harrogate. All the Hunters are known, they're all football men. And I was playing, like I say, Sunday football for the Prince of Wales, and he made me go to him because he was big mates with my dad. He made me come to Harrogate Railway and play for his reserve team, and he just said, first game he went, just put the ball over the top, and I got 4 on my debut for Railway Reserves. And then Bob pestered the first team to put me in the first team, you see. So Bob sort of, he's got a load of sons, they all played football and they never rated me, but the old man did, so he was far better than them. So I started at Railway, and I got in the first team after about 5 or 6 games, and I played on the left wing there. But I think a couple of years previously, one of the greatest ever left wingers ever to play for Harrogate Railway played there was Tony Cannon. He started at Railway, I don't know if you know that.
Yeah, didn't it?
So I knew Tease had been there. So I had a really good season at Harrogate Railway, but it was counties league. And
were you reducing it down to about 5 pints a night here?
No. What changed my life was I got married at 22 and got a mortgage.
Yeah, can't afford it.
And couldn't afford drinking. So I stopped drinking a lot, and now I fall over after half a pint. And I stopped smoking because me and Louise had bought a house, and all our money went to the house. So that basically, and the fact that my wife is a massive cook and loves homemade food, and she totally changed everything about me without ever realising it. I was about nearly 15 stone when I was drinking and carrying on, and now I'm not. So that was the start of it. But the real break I got from football was one of the lads I grew up with called Carl Proctor in Bradford was in a bar drunk at 3 a.m. in Tenerife. I'll tell you where I'm going with this. And he was talking to this chap, and this chap says, I have got one of the best non-league football teams in the north, but we haven't got a centre-forward. And my mate Carl said, my mate's best mate's centre-forward. Here's his phone number. And he went, OK, I never heard of him. And it was the owner of Accrington Stanley. So I got in one night, and back in the 80s, your phone used to be at the bottom of the stairs, didn't it? And I got this phone call, and I got the phone call the week the milk advert came out. So I picked the phone up, and I had this fella called Dave Thornley in a Lancashire accent going, like, Dave Thornley, a manager of Accrington Stanley. And I told him where to get off and put the phone down twice. So he phoned me back, he went, no, we want you to come on trial. And I've never been coached, I just played football. And we got married, I didn't even own a car, and Accrington's 50 miles away. I told you, once you set me off, I'd go on the tangent.
This is perfect, people want to hear you rather than me.
I got invited to go on trial at Accrington Stanley. So I went over, and this manager really didn't fancy me. He didn't know who I was. He didn't want me to play, but the chairman had gone, you wanted a centre-forward, here's a centre-forward, play him. And I went for a trial, and there was a fella, I think his name was Tibor Zabor, who was, I remember watching him as a child play at Bradford City, because I used to watch Bradford as a kid. And I thought, what am I doing if he's here? Because, you know, it's a different... So I trained, and I was absolutely useless. And he says, yeah, we're pretty much Saturday, you're playing up front. Because the chairman said, you're playing him, I've got you. So I played at Clitheroe in a pre-season friendly. We won 3-0. I scored 2. And if anyone has ever watched me play football, I've stuck one in the top corner with my right foot. Now, I've had 3 professional managers tell me I've got the worst right foot they've ever seen in professional football. So as I'm walking off the pitch, he says, can you sign for us here? Of which I said, well, I'll have a word with Kenneth, I'll have a word with my dad, and we'll come back. So I'm walking off the pitch, I'm thinking, why do they want to sign me? So I played another game on a Tuesday night, and he said, the chairman wants to talk to you in the toilet about a sign-on fee and a wage. And I'm like, and I was at Harrogate Railway on maybe £15 a week, which was pin money. And I went inside, and this man basically threatened to double my wage from what I was earning as an engineer to playing football for Accrington Stanley. And I says, well, I haven't got a car. And he went, well, don't worry about training. So I went from Harrogate Railway to play for Accrington Stanley, but I didn't have a car, so I couldn't train with them. Still not being coached, but they were that good. I just stood in the middle, and I hit 20 goals for Christmas, but I couldn't get for training. I wasn't professional enough for them. I was still me. Do you know, I was still, and we just had Hannah, my daughter, and my life was more family in football, whereas I should have concentrated. So it sort of went a bit sideways, but they were top of the league when I was there, and I was top scorer in the league. And it wasn't hard. It was harder playing on the left wing at Railway because the players around me were so much better that I'd hit 20 for Christmas. But my lack of transport got in my way of getting to games and things like that. Christmas, we played Boxing Day, I think, somewhere, and I says, no, I'm at home with my daughter. As you do when you're daft.
Yeah.
He says, well, no, we're training in the morning and we're playing the game. I says, well, I'll see you at the game because I'm at home with my family. And he put me on the bench and they got beat and all. The local press went mental. And then the following week, we were playing somewhere else, and I was late again because my old man was worse at timing than me. So he says, it's not working, but Harrogate Town want you. Now, I could never get in the Harrogate Town team. And I went, Harrogate Town, knowing what Accrington would pay me anyway, I went to Harrogate Town, a team that I could never get in until I went and scored 20 somewhere else. I played the second half of the season at Harrogate Town. I think I scored another 16 goals.
Are they in the same league at this
time? Same league, they're in the same league. Yeah. And Accrington never won league.
Right.
And I went back and I was still the top scorer, which I found funny because, anyway, that's by the by. But while I was at my half a season at Harrogate Town, I was playing somewhere in Manchester and a fella called Billy Ayres, who managed Halifax, Scarborough, Southport, of all of which I played for him at them clubs. He was watching me and I scored a couple of goals and he went, come play for me in the Midland Senior League on a Wednesday afternoon for Halifax Town Reserves. And my first game at the Shea, I scored a hat-trick. And in the crowd was John Bird, Ray McHale, a chap called John King, who was altering a manager for years, and the manager, Charlie. And I've got home and I've had four phone calls from all these managers. And It was fairly... I turned Altrincham down because I still didn't have a car.
Yeah,
and they were playing in the conference and Charlie were in the conference. And Scarborough was too far, but York was obviously the biggest. And I spoke to John Bird and I said, well, why would I not? But I finished the season with Harrogate Town. I spoke to him before the end of the season. So I only really had... I had a season playing with boys, a season in counties, and then I had half a season at Accrington, half season at Harrogate Town, and that was my football education from nothing. And then I ended up at York City.
It's a fascinating story.
You couldn't make it up, could you?
So you're about 25 at this point. So yeah. I imagine it would have been quite a big decision then for you, really, because you can make a lot of people do make quite good money playing a bit of football part time and obviously having a decent job. And so, what were you doing for work back then?
I was I'm a factory manager for an engineering company. I'm a mechanical engineer by trade. I was a supervisor for a factory, but I knew that the factory manager's job would come in my way because I was being groomed for it and the old factory manager was retiring in a year. And I got offered pro at York and I was like, I said, I can't, but I could earn, like you say, I could earn great money in non-league and I earned a good wage.
Probably a better security as well.
So I was going to turn it down and my dad were going mental with me. And my mother, they were both saying, yeah, you can. And I went, well, I can earn so much this way. And it was my wife, who hates football with a passion, seen me play probably three times in my life, won't cross the road to watch football, never watches it on telly. She sat me down and all my great decisions, Louise has gone, you can't let this pass you. Nobody gets asked to do this, so you've got to go for it, even if it's a year. But the MD at the engineering company said, there's a job here running it when you get back. I had a safe bet, but it was my wife that made me go, the girl that hates football with a passion, that says you've got to do it. And that's why I did it, because I wasn't going to.
I'm glad for York City's sake that she did. I mean, and I think I'm right in saying that you played for Harrogate Town on the Saturday and then for York at Chesterfield on the Tuesday. How big was the sort of culture shock going into the pro game? And, was it fitness? Was it skill level? What was it?
It was pure fitness. So I turned up and met them at the ground because I was working. And I rocked up and I used to have my boot bag, but I never clean my boots because I'm lazy. So I turned up and I've got there. And that's the first time I met the players. So I've rocked up and I remember Sean Reid, I've got my boots out and he went, you've got to find him a week's wage for that, gaffer. You can't. And everyone's got clean boots and there's a big boot bag. And I went, well, I just swore at him because I swore at everyone back then. And John Bird went, Blackie, leave your boots, they'll be clean for you when you get back. He said, oh, thanks, John. And everyone used to laugh at me because I never called him gaffer. I've worked in man's world for 10 years. I've been in engineering, so thanks, John. And they're all falling about, you know. Yeah. But it's different cultures. I've never been round a football culture, especially a professional one. I only did a season in a decent semi-professional one.
Yeah.
So I played at Chesterfield. And I was, like I say, I scored lots at that level. And after 20 minutes, I was blowing. I was out of breath. And I thought, I am nowhere near this level, and this level is a different, and it is. And the biggest difference, I had a season at Southport with Billy after I played pro, and I played at Southport in the conference on one leg. The gap between the conference and League Two was pretty big. It's got less now because there's a lot more full-time players in the conference. So I knew I had to sort myself out, sort of thing, get fit.
Did you sort of appreciate it more being a pro footballer, being 25 and full-time game at that point, than if you'd have been, say, 18 and given a pro contract, do you think?
Yeah, because I first 2 years of my married life, I worked overtime till 7 o'clock Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and work Saturday morning, then went and played football. Mm. Where this is got to be there for 10. You know, and I was first there. I used to go in, make a cup of tea, sit, wait for them. And then once you're fit, you finished at 12:30. And I've never been used to time like that. Yeah. And the problem with having time like that is all my mates work for a living.
Yeah.
So I either sat in back garden talking with neighbour who didn't work. The massive difference when you've always worked.
Yeah.
To suddenly go to them hours. Don't get me wrong, you work all day Saturdays and Wednesday nights, and if you're not in the first team, if you're on the bench, you're out Tuesday night, Wednesday night because you're playing. But yeah, the time difference is good.
And you signed in September 1990, I think. That was sort of shortly after the tragedy of David Longley, so I suppose that must have been of almost sort of sombre time around the club.
It was, because me and John McCarty signed maybe the same time.
Yeah.
Lovely, delightful fella. And yeah, it was, because I was still a bit part-time, I wasn't round it that much. I just knew, I didn't talk to anyone about it because I didn't know him and it wasn't my business. But I think it affected a couple. Pep might have been big friends with him. Yeah. But I never really involved myself in that. How do you ask that question?
Yeah,
how do you
that's what that? I mean. That's what I mean about the time of joining around that time of the club, because what do you say to people when that sort of happens?
You move on and unusual you play football. But I also had the excitement of playing Division 4 from 2 years previously, 3 years previously, playing with Prince of Wales on a Harrogate District second division.
And by December, you had one of your most memorable kind of career moments, really, with a hat-trick away at Wrexham. A story which ages really well, doesn't it, given what Wrexham have kind of turned into. Am I right in thinking that you only kind of started that game because Ian Helliwell was ill?
Ian Helliwell, I think, was in hospital. Because I remember in training, someone said, well, do you want to go see him? And I went, well, do you want me to go see him? And they were all falling about laughing at me. Of course I want you to go see him because you're taking his place. And that's how footballers think, you see. And that always stuck in my mind. But yeah, so Bigham was out and I came in and scored a hat-trick.
Yeah. They were your first league goals as well for
I didn't know that. Like I say, I only found that out this year. I thought, I always remember my goal at Grimsby as my first. But most of that season, I scored loads in the reserves. I was mainly in the reserves with the young players.
It must have been such a high, though, to get that hat-trick at Wrexham, you know, in the professional game. And I'm sure you've got hat-tricks for Harrogate Town and Railway and all that.
I have, but it didn't dawn on me until I had a phone call from the York Press, and I think I might have been at work or something, and they wanted to come and take my photograph in my club blazer and put it in the paper. I think I still have the photo. So not that there's anything to do with football in my house, because my wife won't have anything to do with football in the house. And that was the first time, because I mean, when I played at, like say, I always got newspaper cuttings from over at Accrington and Harrogate and things like that, but that was the time, like, oh yeah, this is a bit different,
yeah.
It was good.
Special. And one thing that always sort of fascinates me talking to players who played under John Bird was this idea that he gave everyone a shot of whiskey before he went out to play.
Well, the option was there. It was always on the physio's table if you wanted one. And a few did, and I couldn't think of anything worse. But we're all different, aren't we? Yeah. I always stuck to the 48. I never drank 2 days before a game. In fact, I very rarely drink now because I just suffer when I drink. So what's the point of me drinking if I'm going to be dead for 2 days?
Well, it sounds like you did all your drinking when you were 13.
I stopped at 22, yeah, true. See, my dad at a pub.
Some of the debut you mentioned there about John McCarthy, I think some other players that made the debuts that season as well, Steve Bushell, Nigel Pepper, Dean Kiley. And I know that on the pitch, there wasn't a lot of success around that time, but there were some good players around there. There was a nucleus that was sort of building, wasn't there?
Yeah, I always loved Bush because he never took a backward step to anybody, even as a kid. And I like that in a man. And I remember a training ground incident with one of the senior players, and they started, and he was about 18, 19, he'd just come in, and they squared off. And I loved him for him. He never took a backward step, didn't move side, and I loved Bush from that moment for that. Whereas Dino, you could see Dino was going better because he had there's certain players that you can see the mentality and athleticism. That's a big thing that you see in players. But if they have the mental strength's one of the biggest things.
Yeah.
And Dino always had belief that he was going to play a decent standard. I suppose arrogance is the right word. You need arrogance.
Yeah.
You need to have utter belief in yourself. And I always saw him, and he was a young lad. He was the one that was sort of caught between the young pros and the old pros when he came in from Coventry.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, but he was young, but he always had this mentality that we're going to take him to where it took him, and yeah. Fair play to him.
He was almost to take a step back to go, yeah. Sort of too far.
But he always thought he was, and he was better than what.
Yeah.
What York was.
Yeah. You had a really good end to the 91-92 season with, I think, 7 goals in the last 2 months of the season. You finished top scorer with 11 all competitions. John Ward had come in by this point.
Yeah.
And I know that he made a massive difference to you as an individual. So
massive.
Just talk about that and what difference he made to the group as well.
Do you know, I'm glad you mentioned that. I didn't know that. But John came in and put me on the left wing and they laughed. And I must admit, I remember John Bird. When I first started training full time, I'm off on a tangent again.
Go for it.
To do a thing called shadow play on a Friday, where they set up the system, the systems are played, and they put you in positions, and you play against a team that isn't there, and you go through patterns of play. And the first couple on a Friday, I remember thinking, they are actually not. I'm not a paranoid person, but I was thinking they are doing this for me because I haven't got a clue where to run because I've never been coached. But that's what teams do: they set up systems of play. What patterns you're going to play. And I remember Birdie putting me on the left wing and them all laughing, and he gave up because I signed as a forward. But John Ward came in and I didn't know I scored that many after he put me on left wing, because people always say I was a forward, but I scored my goals as a left winger under John Ward. And I'd love to know I didn't know I got 7 after he come in.
Yeah.
And I remember him coming in because I was playing up front. I was wrecked. No, I'd done my ankle and we had a new manager. This is how bad I was. And my wife was heavily pregnant with my son. She's going to destroy me for this. So she's gone into labour. And one of the very few games I remember is November the 8th, 1991, Doncaster away, 1-0, Tony Cannon. I even remember the goal. Don't remember a lot of mine. Remember TC's. And it was the night my son was born, because I was holding a hand as she was in labour, and I said, I'm going to have to go, love, I'm playing tonight, your mother's outside. And I left, biggest regret of my career, and I went to play football, and Louise's mother came in and she had my son. And he was born that night, and that's one of the few games I remember, because TC scored, but Wardy had just come in, and my ankle, I'd done my ligaments badly, so I strapped up and played, as you did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that because you wanted to prove to John, you know,
I was last year of my contract.
Right, okay.
I was last year of my contract, so yeah. So, and my wife, for all her hating football, understood that our lifestyle was better.
It's a good job, really.
Yeah, yeah. Our life were better with me playing football.
Yeah.
So I went, but I didn't know that's when I started scoring when Wardy came in.
Yeah,
he put me on the left wing, yeah.
The next season was, you know, I know 92-93, Paul Barnes was obviously fantastic, gave the team incredible amount of goals, but you were outscoring him early doors. I think you had 10 before Christmas Was that down to you sort of enjoying your football as well?
No, that was all down to John Ward and the way he set us up. So he basically brought in 3 players, John Borthwick, Paul Barnes, and Swanee, Gary Swan. And I looked back and thought, he brought Gary Swan in. I'm selfish for me, because Swanee was absolutely magnificent for me. So Swanee came, there were Pep in midfield, Swanee left, and he put me left wing and John Boy on the right. And we had licence to fly, and that's what we did. And I'm a 6'1" left wing, so far post, I am A, forgotten, and B, I was pretty good in the air. And John was just, we were both quick. Barney were quick. But Both came this way and held the ball up and brought players in. And I thought that was our best setup. The fact that Tony Cannon was a far better footballer than me, and TC's a far better, 2 good feet, reads the game better. But set up that way, I scored goals. And I scored goals because I had Both bringing me in, Barney had passed to me, and Swanee held everything together behind me. Not only that, Swanee had me on the string. He was going, get up there, come back here, tuck in here. You know, what Ginner should have done, but Ginner were quiet. And Swanee was a very quiet man, but he knew football. And I said, Swanee, and he went, Blackie, you just go score the goals. I'll cope with this. And that was what Wardy wanted us to do. So we bombed. And Both didn't get the recognition I thought he deserved, because he linked us all together. Barney's always going to score your goals. John Boy's always going to run and run and run all day. He was along with John Boy. And I'd get a few. And I think that's when we're... And Pep always didn't miss penalties that season. And I think that was our best team. We stand at the back. We had Ray Warburton was unlucky with an illness and injury, and we had Ake and we had Tutt. So we had four great centre-halves, and we just had a really good... Then we had Dino. We had a really good team.
Andy Mack as well.
Andy Mack and Gina. So that was, under Wardy, that was my favourite place. Now, when John went, Alan put me up front, and I thought, I'm not going to say I'm a bad centre-forward because I'm a good centre-forward, but me and Barney both go that way, and we're both links. So we got more goals, and TC came back in the team. But I thought I was more effective goal-wise. I bet my stats are better on the left wing.
I think they were. I think you got 16 for the season, but like I said, 10 before Christmas.
Yeah.
I wanted to discuss a few of the sort of key games and goals that season that you're involved in. A lot of people point to their sort of favourite goal of yours being the free kick against Cardiff at home in the 3-1 win. Was that one of your favourite goals? And why didn't you take more free kicks?
Wardy wanted me to take them when we were further out than, because I had quite a powerful shot. I think I took one at the beginning of the season, hit the post. But anything curlable, TC or Gina would take. But distance, so how many do you get at distance like that?
Yeah, true.
But my cross for John McCarthy's header in the first goal at Cardiff was one of my favourite ever crosses. And no one ever mentions that to me.
Well, you've mentioned it there.
There you go. It was a great header. It was a better goal than my free kick with John's header in that game.
Yeah.
Have you ever get a chance to see it?
I've seen, yeah, I know
it's
which one you're referring to, yeah.
It's unbelievable.
And in fact, you had a really good record against certain teams as well, Cardiff being one of them. You scored twice away in the 3-3 draw at Ninian Park and 3-0 down at half time. First of all, that must have been some team talk from John Ward.
Not only that, but we were 2-0 down and we got a penalty. And Pep missed the keeper saved the penalty. They went down the other end and made it 3-0. And I've come in thinking we're going to get hammered here. And he sat us down. And he didn't really hammer it, and he went, well played. Keep playing that, you'll get something out of this game. And I was thinking, because I've played for John, but I've played for Billy Ayres, one of my first games where I was like, you can't speak to people like that. And probably don't nowadays. But yeah, and he just went, no, keep doing what we're doing. We'll get something out of this game.
Yeah.
And he was right.
And that was one of my sort of follow-up questions, really, was that I've met John and I've interviewed him as well and remember him fondly in the press as well. And he was very sort of quietly spoken, wasn't he? Was he always like that in the dressing room? Did he ever lose it?
Yeah, talk you away.
Right. I don't blame him, to be fair.
Yeah, talk you away. Oh, dearie me. The only time, he even mentioned my children in his rant. He locked the door for an hour at Torquay away. But no, it was, John was years and years ahead of his time. I mean, to educate me for a start, of which, what John did in 92 is he brought in the nutritionists and sports psychologists, which I found hysterical. Footballers as daft can be. How do you want to, everything would go over the head. And he brought in the sports psychologists, and we sat and we had meetings with them, and it did so much for me. This fella used to come on the pitch and talk to John McCarthy before the game about mentality and going forward and things like that, where I never needed it. But what it taught me was how my mind works in sport is how it should work. So how I think about the night before a game and how I think about football was how you should think. But that was just, it's just an actual thing I've got, and I keep that. I've always kept, my greatest gift was my mentality. And it still is,
but not everyone else had that.
No. And he brought them in, and they brought the dietitians in, and I just took the sheet home and said to Louise, this is what we're eating.
Well, she's a good cook, so I'm sure
great
she'll
cook.
She'll
and she was well
that.
Happy because I was so fussy, and she used to carbohydrate stack and pasta and everything, and yeah, and that was 1992.
I was going to say, because that now wouldn't sound...
No.
It would be like, everyone's doing that. But so, back then in 92, I bet hardly anyone was doing
probably,
it.
Yeah, probably. I never knew if he got it off Graham Taylor or he got it off... Did he work for the...
He did a bit for England, didn't he, as well?
Yeah, but he did a bit for Villa for that Vangelis,
Dr. Venglos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know where he got, but it was brilliant. And Fridays was very routine with games we played, with skill games and laughs and... And he was just the best manager and coach. He wasn't my favourite, because my favourite was Billy Ayres by a country mile, because I loved Billy, because he was crackers like me. I just loved the man. But for coaching-wise and management-wise, and I bet if you ask half that team, they'll say the same. He was just years ahead. His mum, I once went into his office kicking off, and if anyone who knows me knows I can kick off, because I'm that way out. And I remember apologising to him, closing the door and thinking, I'm sure I've come here to kick off. Sorry, thanks, Gaff. I called him, thanks, Gaff, for shut the door all night. I'm sure I came and braised R down. And, yeah,
was, come was, a long way talking to him as a gaffer.
I was, I was so upset when he left, and I think the whole team was because he was. But Alan carried it on.
Yeah, we'll come on to Alan. I just wanted to a couple of other things before we get to Alan. Going back to Cardiff, a flying dog in the crowd.
Yeah, so I've, as you know, you pulled up on this because I got asked. Somebody asked me on a question and answer if I remember Boxing Day 1992, and I said, I remember Boxing Day 2024. And it was Cardiff away, it was that game. And I said, I actually remember it because it's the only game that I stopped and watched the crowd, because the Swansea support game had been off and they'd come and got in the Cardiff end. And an almighty fight kicked off, and I knew it wasn't York fans because I think there was only 80 there. And as I'm watching them all fighting, at the time, obviously, I didn't know it was Cardiff Swansea, a police dog was in there and someone had picked it up and thrown it. And I just remember going, what is going on? Seeing a dog flying through the air. And then I thought, well, I'm on the pitch, I better get back to playing football.
Yeah. Good job you did. It was 3-3, wasn't it, in the end?
Yeah.
And a couple of other kind of goals as well and games that you played in. You scored in the 5-1 win at home to Scunthorpe, but one that was played in the snow with the orange ball. Do you remember that?
Yes. Barney,
I think Barney got four, I think. Yeah.
Started with a white ball, ended up in a blizzard, and then ended up with an orange ball, yeah. Gary Swan again. Yeah. All Gary used to do in midfield, I knew if he got the ball, bless him, he always looked left. So one touch and he put it behind for me to run onto, and he made that. If you ever find that one, he made that one. He just get, and I knew as soon as it comes to him, because most players look right. Mm-hmm. Swanee always looked left for me, so one touch gone and I'm through on goal.
And because you knew that, I guess you would have had a
he was brilliant.
Had a march on the defender as well, like knowing that that's exactly what he was going to do.
He was
got
just
it.
great for me with Swanee.
Yeah, and another 5-1 win away to Barnet, in which was Alan Little's first game. So you said there you were upset when John Ward was leaving. So
everybody was.
Was it a shock then? No.
Football's a small community. You hear the rumours, so we heard the rumour. Did he go to Bristol City?
Bristol Rovers. Yeah, but he didn't actually manage Bristol City.
Yeah, we heard the rumours that he was going, and then he came in one day and he was gone. And Alan took over and we were playing Barnet away, and Barnet were Barnet top.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and we went there and done a right number on him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was.
He scored in that as well.
I always scored a few against Barnet. I always scored.
Yeah. Scunthorpe, Barnet, Cardiff, I think were ones.
Okay.
Donny as well.
Donny, yeah.
Which, again, I'll come on to that in a sec. Alan had this reputation for taking no prisoners when he joined in training. Plus, you had the likes of Nigel Pepper, Steve Tuttle. Were you desperate to sort of be on their team in a five-a-side then?
No, I never cared. The only one bothered me was Alan. Alan used to train with us, and he was a fit man. But he would take you out. So if him and Tony Barrett was on the same team, you'd be jumping out of the way. Pep wasn't that bad in training. But, tough as well.
Yeah.
So, he'd go through you. The assistant manager would go through you in training, yeah.
Was that kind of a best-case scenario for you as players then? Someone like Alan coming in and taking it over rather than, say, a brand-new manager coming in who no one knew, and Alan was able to kind of almost keep the good work that John Ward had done, wasn't
he? Yeah, it moved me back in the middle, which I didn't want to do. Well, sorry, I didn't want to do was the wrong word. We were playing in the top four of that league. We were going for promotion. I'd play anywhere he asked me to play. I always thought we were better with Both up top than me, and also I didn't score as many when I went up top as I did on the left wing. I think the way Ward had set us up was just right for the way me and John McCarthy play football and for Barnet. They get nothing to stop Barnet scoring.
I think John Borthwick, I think his goals dried up a little bit, didn't they, after Christmas, and that was potentially why. But another goal people really remember you fondly for was the header away at Doncaster. I think that was on a Friday night, possibly.
Do you know, I loved a Friday night. Got my weekend off with kids, but we played that season. We played Darlow away Friday night, scored 1-0. And I remember the fans, because there were so many went to Darlow on the Friday night, and we won 1-0, and I scored at where the fans were, and I loved that. We beat Donny 1-0 on a Friday night, and I scored that. I think we played Gillingham away on a Friday night, won 4-1, and I got one there. And I think we had four Friday nights, and I scored in all of them. And I had the weekend off. So.
Well, Gillingham's a fair trek, isn't it?
Yeah.
The dark fans, the other ones were a bit.
I think Barney put it on it, and I nearly missed header from about 8 inches in off the post, but I claimed it.
and comparisons very much with this season's team. You know, very good players in every position. Top goal scorer of the division with Paul Barnes and obviously Ollie Pearce this season. But also, I feel like a closeness in the group. You guys all seem to have each other's backs, and you can even see that. I was watching some of the old sort of goals from that season, the celebrations, you can tell almost that you're kind of in unison.
Yeah, I was never one for celebrating, really.
No, you did it Donny away, big jump in the air. And
Yeah. I remember my first game at a level was, I'm going back to Halifax for Billy Ayres, and I'd scored two in the first half, and we're coming at half time, and I'm sat there, and he came in and he levelled everybody. And I mean, get your shirt off, you could be in a factory in a year. And I'm not to me, to this other lad, and I'm thinking, I work in a factory. And then he got to me and he pointed at me and he went, you, and he levelled everyone. He went, you, you score goals for me, you celebrate them. I went, okay. So I didn't really, you have a look, I didn't really celebrate them like I should have. Just, I don't know, just in bad, just don't know. Because I am loud.
Right.
But no. I did it, Donny, because it was in front of the crowd, yeah. And it was an important game.
Yeah, very close to the end of the season.
Yeah.
And like I say, I felt like you guys were all very close. You mentioned before, you got a WhatsApp group that you all keep in touch. And you had characters, didn't you, in the team, like Tony Canham and Nigel Pepper. What's your sort of memories of being in a friendship group with them?
Yeah, well, Pep was crackers and still is, in the best possible way. Great character. Absolute joy to have around the change room, always up to summer. And then you had John McCarthy, he's the nicest man in the world. I just adored him, he was such a sweetheart. I used to pick him up and kiss him just to annoy him, because he couldn't stop me. But he said, Blackie, I pray for you. I went, I'll take more than that, John Boy. But that's John Boy, you see. But he was, and Tony Callum's another real cat. He's a great lad, his TC. I still wish him happy birthday, and he sent me a text going, him and his missus must come over to Harrogate for a night. I said, gentlemen, but good fun. Everyone was sort of involved. You always get cliques in football. You always get the younger and the older, and, you know, like I mentioned earlier, the younger ones with Bush and Dean up. But you're right, everything aligns, doesn't it, when you're doing well. And I'm sure this team that they had this season, which is, still upsetting, but they're together, aren't they?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
And
yeah.
The first night I did with you, Ollie Pearce was there, and what a delightful fellow he is. Very nice man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it all kind of came up to those playoff games with Bury and then obviously onto Wembley, but the home game against Bury is talked about by supporters as being, well, I was there, I remember it being one of the best atmospheres ever at Boven Crescent. And did you feel that as players that night?
Yeah, you do. You know what's coming, don't you? You know, I never got nervous playing football. I don't know why, I just didn't. But
your mentality, maybe?
No, I'm just daft. So I never really worried about it, and I never took anything after. So if I got beat, it was gone.
Yeah,
and I never took anything with me, but yeah, that was a big night. And coming in the changing room afterwards, when the pitch was invaded, then we went up, and that was spectacular.
Because that was quite early days for playoffs, wasn't it? It was quite a new thing back then.
Yeah.
And given, you know, that the final was going to be played at the old Wembley and everything, I know you said you didn't get nervous, but did you feel as a group extra pressure that, like, you know, this could be the best moment of my career if I get to this?
Well,
and Bury, there were two very, very close games as well, weren't there?
Well, you think about it, 5 years earlier I was playing on Stray in Harrogate. So a bit of a difference, really. So what do you mean you played that way? So yeah, it was. And Crewe had such a great semi-finals. I think they'd won by a load, hadn't they?
Mm.
And we knew, was it Naylor to watch? And but yeah, but we just fancied it. The hardest thing is when you finish the semi-final, you've got a gap because it's the end of the month, and then you're training every day, and no one's put a foot in, and people get a bit tetchy. Because I think I might have swore at Alan Little, which wasn't one of my better ideas, and if you want to play at Wembley, and that's end of that conversation, isn't it? Sorry.
Is that
because
he wiped you out in training?
No, I don't know what I'd said to him, but it was me being me.
Right. And coming on to Wembley, I mean, you know, the floor is yours, really. What's your memories of the day and the game? And
well,
you say you like to go off on a tangent. This is the best time to do one.
We stayed the night before. I think TC did some tapes of it all. Mm. You stay the night before in a hotel, and then you've got your T-shirts, you've got your club suits. Because the week before, you know, you get Pavers provided the shoes, M&S provided the suits, and everything's, and it's all publicising. And it's great for the city.
Mm.
But it's great for you. But I didn't realise how great it was until maybe 20 years after. It never dawned on me, you know, till I finished playing Conference North when I was 40 at Harrogate Town, and just walked away from football 2005, never thought of. And then you think, oh, OK. Because you just...
So you're
what's
in the
next?
Moment at the time, yeah.
But what I loved was the coach to Wembley with the police escort with the motorcycles, you know, and they stop all the junctions and you go through, and then you come up Wembley Way and the crowd's there. Then the old Wembley used to drive into it, drive in to the coaches, get off the coach and the changing rooms are there, then you walk up and out. So, and that was, I mean, it's Wembley, but it's the old one, it's the Twin Towers. And
yeah,
I know some, I knock about with a couple of lads who played a far better standard of football than me, and one of them played over 700 league games, loads of Premier, never played at Wembley. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, and he went, how have you played there? Do you know? But it's the, and that's what the playoffs gives the lower league players.
Yeah.
And even Conference to go there, I mean, York have been there in...
Yeah, loads of times.
Yeah. It's phenomenal. And my nephew's been there twice and lost twice. And I said to him, not now, but when you get in your 40s, you'll take great pride that you've played in an FA Cup semi-final at Wembley and you've got beat in the playoffs. And he was so upset, but I went...
But would you have said that to him if you'd have lost that day?
I said to him, I've lost in a semi-final playoffs League One at Stockport.
Yeah.
And I was... That's probably the most upset I've been in football, which probably lasts 3 hours with me, not...
Yeah.
You know. But now, if people ask me, I'll say, well, yeah, we went back-to-back playoffs.
Yeah.
So now I'm 60.
Yeah.
I say, well, we went League Two win, then we got beat. We were two games from Championship, weren't we?
Yeah, which.
So I look back on a playoff defeat, now I'm an old man, as a great thing.
Yeah, and I suppose that's the same with York this season, isn't it? 96 points losing in a playoff.
Yeah.
We'll look back and say that was a great season.
It'll hurt for 10 years.
Yeah.
But what the supporters need to do is go, enjoy every point they made. 96 points. Look at the football they've played.
Yeah.
It's spectacular what they've done. I came, was it two seasons? Dunny invites me every now and again. And I came, Gateshead, 1-1. And the atmosphere, this was before the surge, was nothing like when I came last time. And when they played Altrincham and it wasn't the best. But I'm like, you can feel it. You feel it. You must feel it in the stadium.
Yeah.
And last time I came, they're going somewhere. And if you don't do it this year, they'll do it because... They're at it, and they know they're at it. 96 points is incredible.
Going back to Wembley, I presume that's one of the three games that your wife has seen you play football.
She came to Wembley, yes.
That's good.
I think she watched me play in Knaresborough for Prince of Wales when we first started dating, and that might be the other one, Wembley, yeah.
Right.
But all the family went.
And I remember, tell us the story about your memories when you first got in the changing rooms, which was a
classic. You've heard
classic.
So... We've got in the changing room and I thought, well, we all have our routines, I need to go to the toilet. And I'm sat on the toilet and I just sat there and thought, how many famous arses have sat on this toilet? And it's just, but that's how my mind works. And I'm thinking, there's been a few famous arses here, aren't there? But also in the changing room at the old Wembley, they had a stand-up bath, which so you could get the steps down and stand up. And it came up to maybe chest. And I was thinking, and I love a bath. Oh, I'm going to have a bath after this game. And then we went extra time, penalties. And I got in the bath and I was that tired. I had to get out of the bath because I couldn't stand up and go in. I can't believe I can't stand up in this bath. But
a bit different to the bath at Bootham Crescent.
I love the bath at Bootham Crescent. I loved them. If you're ever injured, get the bath on and get in the bath, yeah.
So what was it like, the game itself, and when you came out the tunnel and you looked at...
Well, you're looking for people you know.
Yeah.
And then you're looking for the fans.
And you had a lot of people there that you knew.
Yeah, I had a coach, Doddy Dodsworth, who used to divert the coach to Harrogate for my lot, because we're a big family. And, and they're all there. And it is... I'm of the generation where the big game of the year was Wembley FA Cup final. And you sat in front of the telly at 10 o'clock with your sandwiches. And you did. And today's youth would laugh at us because there's 400 games on a year. But we never had that. And the only place to play is Wembley. Not that I dreamt of playing football as a child. So to actually go there, Stanley was excited. Stanley was the end of the career and he'd had a fantastic career. But he knew what it meant and he led us out and he was immensely proud.
And he had a great game as well.
Yeah, he was a great player.
Yeah,
I can only imagine how good he was when he had legs.
Yeah.
But he was just, immense. Great footballer. And you're going out and you're walking out and you're looking for people you know and then you just try to take it in and you go, I'm at Wembley. You know, and anyone who doesn't say that is lying because all school boys. And I'm sure the new Wembley's the same for people.
And then when the game kicks off, are you then, do you switch to sort of game
football.
Mode quite quickly?
Yeah, it's just, football, yeah.
Yeah, penalties. You didn't fancy one.
No, I thought I was gonna take one after Jinnah, but if you ever see Jinnah score, by the time he celebrates, me and Bush have landed on because I know I'm not taking one. So I was so happy for him.
Yeah, thinking about that Bath as well.
Yeah.
The following season, 93-94, like you say, it was another great season, really, looking back. And I think you suffered with injury the first half of the season, missed quite a lot of games. And
I broke my leg in pre-season, and they bought Coops.
Yeah.
So Coops were always going to play, because Al bought him, which I understood. Didn't like it, but I understood. So I knew the fact that I missed pre-season and he bought centre forward, I knew I was...
You're up against it. Yeah. But you did score 7 in the second half of the season. Yeah, when another two at Barnet, second to last game.
When I got in the pitch, on the pitch, yeah. Well, we went on a run and we kept winning and winning, because I think around Christmas we were nowhere near the top. And Stan came back as well. But I think when I came back in, we were near the bottom. And it wasn't because I came back in, it's just how football is sometimes. So we went on this run, and then Coops got fit, and he put him back in. He says, and I went mental with him. And it was Port Vale away, and I went, if we get beat, I'm bringing your door down. And we got beat, and we've been on a run. Anyway, I got back in, and I never lost my place.
Yeah.
But I knew my days were numbered.
I was going to say, because you played both the playoff games against Stockport.
Yeah,
were you surprised then that you were allowed to leave? But I was going to say, was it on the cards earlier? So you
bought centre forward. But when I got back in and got fit, I played really well. So yeah. It's football. It's a brutal. It's not personal. It's business.
Yeah.
And if you're spending a lot of money on a centre forward, you're playing him. Especially in lower league football.
Yeah. But when you're getting 7, though, towards in that second half, and like I said, 2 at Barnet, and you got back in the team, were you still hoping that you would get another year or another 2?
Well, I was in the last year of my contract, and it turned up to Scarborough made an offer we've accepted. I really didn't want to go to Scarborough, but they offered me great money and a 2-year deal. And me and Gary Swan went. And I knew it was a mistake because the ball was the week before the start of the season, because we'd done our pre-season with York, was when we got introduced on our first game of the season as new signings, Ian Blackson and Gary Swan, and we got booed before we kicked the ball. And Swanee went, thank God I've only signed a 1 year. I went, I've signed a 2. It did get better from them for a pair of us.
Yeah, and you then had a spell playing out in Hong Kong as well, didn't you? Which is... How did that come about, and what was the standard like? What was the lifestyle like for you out there?
So I was 30, and I'd fallen out with the chairman of Scarborough, of which I won't say why, but it serves me right. I called him something on the bus in front of everybody, which you don't do you, to a chairman? You're not going to win that one. I'd call him it again if I saw him. So they wanted me to go on loan, because I think I was the highest paid there, and they wanted me off the books. And I don't know if I'm like Steve Norris, used to play at Chesterfield. He pulled me one day and says, my mate Mick Leonard, who was a goalkeeper, is in Hong Kong, they want a centre forward. Do you fancy going on loan for 3 months? And I went, Hong Kong is the only place in the world I've ever wanted to go to. And my wife knew it.
Right.
You know, I want to go to Hong Kong. So I went home and I said, I've been offered 3 months, I'm not in the team. Because I was, I'm going to Hong Kong. And she went, yeah, go. Because Louise is like that.
Mm.
Not really thinking I've actually got to go. So I went on loan to a club for Hong Kong, but I did me knee the week before. And I went on best terms with Scarborough. I went to see a chap called Alan Sutton, who used to be Leeds United physio. Sutton lives up in Purley, great lad. And I went, what's up with my knee? He went, you've done your cartilage. I went, I'm flying out to Hong Kong. This was Friday, I'm flying out to Hong Kong. Monday, he went, you'll get away with it. Keep playing. So you sure? He went, yeah, you'll get away with it. It's a bit painful. So I went and had 3 months in Hong Kong, and it was spectacular.
And did you get many goals out of there? Were you playing the wing? Or
I got, I got a hat-trick on my last game. I played 6 games and scored 3.
Right.
And then I came home. But the children had started school, so I probably could have gone back. And I got offered Perth, Australia, back then.
Right.
And Louise went, you've had your holiday in Hong Kong. All right, Lou below. So I didn't go.
Yeah, if you said, oh, I've almost wanted to go to Australia as well, I thought it was a bit of a...
Yeah. So, Hong Kong was fantastic. But like I said, I went on loan there, and Swanee went on loan to a club in China, and he rocked up in Hong Kong a month later, not happy. No, that was the last time I saw him. I hope you get him on a podcast.
I'd love to get him on.
And if you do, tell him I appreciate all my goals, because he was...
I will.
He was a puppet master.
And the transition out of football might have been, I suppose, easier for you because of the route you came into it. And you mentioned there, I know they said they were keeping the job open for you. I'm sure they didn't realise it was going to be 5 years down the line. But was that an easy transition?
Well, it sort of was, because when I left Scarborough, I only had one season, and they paid me up, and it was very... I got the PFA involved, Well, I didn't.
Yes, I remember you saying they paid you in backdated checks.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
So I left, and Keith Houchin had phoned me from Hartlepool. Come play for us. But when I was in Hong Kong, Billy Ayres, I played for Billy at Halifax and Scarborough. That was the only reason I went to Scarborough, was Billy were there. And he was, he's the best man ever. And then he phoned me when I was in Hong Kong. He says, I'm at Southport. I'm not playing for you. You know, it's too far. And he went, but Houch wants you at Hartlepool, because he knew him. So I've done a deal and I've gone to Scarborough. So what I did was I went to Scarborough and spoke to Ray McHale and got paid off. And from there, I drove straight up to Hartlepool to sign on for Hartlepool. But by the time I got there, Keith Houchin had said, I can't sign you because the chairman says your knee's no good.
Right.
I went, fine. So what happened then was Billy Ayres straight up, he went, come play for me at Southport. And Billy paid me more playing part-time than Hartlepool was going to pay me full-time. But I wanted to stay full-time because once you're out of the game,
yeah.
I was 31, you're not back in. So I was prepared to take less money to stay at Hartlepool. Because Scarborough were funding it for a year, weren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
So Scarborough fans hate me, so it don't matter. With a passion, I may add. So I went and played in the conference at Southport with Billy, and it was fantastic with me. And then I went back to my old job, programming CNC machinery, and the MD was great. He said, yeah, do what you want. So I just did a few hours. And then one day, I was in my office, and we thought, come see me. And I went up, and he looked me straight in the eye, we were really blunt. West York, he went, I thought we had a deal. I went, what? He says, the deal was, when you finish playing full-time football, you can work for me full-time and run the factory. I says, well, I'm still playing. He went, part-time, get back to work Monday. So I had to go back to work full-time, which was the right thing to do. So that was easy getting. That was a good back in. Yeah, so although I took a leap of faith, I had always had a fallback plan.
So sort of 25 to sort of 30, 31 then.
31,
You packed a lot in, didn't you, into that time,
yeah.
really?
Yeah, it was, yeah. But my favourite 4 years were York.
Yeah.
By a country mile. Yeah. It was just the people I met. The club, it was such a well-run club. And like say, the characters in the change room. I remember the characters at York more than all the other clubs I've played at. And I've played at a lot of non-league. Accrington Stanley, Chorley, Southport. And I don't remember the players, but I remember everyone from York. Do you know what I mean? And all the characters.
From Hong Kong.
I remember Mick from Hong Kong because I lived with him for 3 months and it was unbelievable. And I won't talk about that.
Billy Ayres, you've mentioned him quite a lot. So I feel like we need to, you know, you mentioned his crackers. Give us an example.
No, he was well known as being really tough as a centre-half. And he was a tough man. But actually, he was very intelligent, ex-teacher, great. If he loved you, he loved you. And like I say, he signed me at Halifax and he just says, come play for me on a Wednesday. And I was supposed to sign for him on the day I was going to sign, which would be my first pro club, I was at Harrogate Town, he resigned and Halifax never phoned me, which is why I went to York, you see. But when he got the Scarborough job, Kenneth, my dad, went, you know it's coming in for you, don't you? And he were right. 3 weeks later, Billy's...
Must be quite a good feeling to know that a manager... you know, want you that much and want you in each club.
Do you know, the only good part of... There was a couple of nice lads at Scarborough, but it was him. And I got away with stuff that no one else really could with Billy. But I am blunt, so I'll tell you one, he nearly killed me for it. So one day, we've come into training and Sky had a big newspaper advertising Sky Sports, and on it, for some unknown reason, was a picture of Joe Starling. And I'm like, he's the double of Billy Ayres with a moustache. So I have cut the paper out, stuck it on the manager's door, put, is this Joe Starling and Billy Ayres? You see, I've walked off laughing my head off because I am basically 7 years of age. So unbeknown to me, this is after training, Billy has got a Northern Echo reporter to come see him that afternoon. He's seen it. He's put in the Northern Echo, spot the difference, picture Billy Ayres, picture Joe Starling, of which he has gone mental. So we've come in training next day and he's lying everybody up. And I'm like, don't laugh. And he was on one. And if he's on one, you get out of his way. And he's gone up to everyone. No, who's done it? And he's come up to me and went, I know it's you, Blackstone. I know. I went, gaffer, would I? I know it's you. And somebody put a note under his door saying it were Blackie. But yeah, I just remember. And I dealt with him years later. He ended up assistant manager at Cardiff City with Ian Mulby back in the late 90s. And I was working down there. And I phoned Cardiff City because I'm going to take him out for a meal. And I phoned him and I went, can I speak to Billy Ayres? I went, no. Who are you? I went, oh, tell me. So I'm in this meeting and he phones me up. And I went, and I didn't know his mobile. And he went, it's Joe Starling. You see, and I'm laughing my head off. I went, Billy Ayres, how are you? But he was a top man, a great, anyone you speak to about him in football. So yeah, as a man, I like Billy. But as a manager, Wardy.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And just sort of reflecting on your career as a whole, and you played an era where there was two up front, and I know you played a fair bit on the left wing, but was there any sort of favourite strike partner that you had that you played with?
Paul Barnes. Come on. It's the York City podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Barney was a clever footballer, and he was just a nice man as well, nice family, and he was a great lad, but he just scored goals, and he was ruthless about it.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, as nice as he was, if he didn't pass to him, he'd let you know, give me the ball. And that's the mentality that you need to score 20 plus goals. I'm sure Ollie's the same.
Yeah.
Give me the ball.
I definitely think he is, yeah. I mean, favourite player to play alongside Paul Barnes, favourite manager John Ward.
Favourite player to play, Gary Swan, because of what he did for me.
Right.
Wardy brought him in and he was perfect because he sat in and he just went, you go get our goals, Blackie, I'll cover this. Yeah. So he ends up with one at semi and one at final. But other than that, that was his only two goals that season.
It was, yeah.
Because I scored him because he allowed position. He allowed me to go on. He went, if I want you back, I'll tell you. I had a licence.
Who was your toughest opponent you ever faced?
Probably Tut in training. Tut loved kicking centre-forwards. I had a couple of funny ones. I've never shied away from the physical side. It never bothered me. And I caught a lesson playing Barnet, one of the first games against Barnet, and I actually scored my right foot. And I've done the centre-half for pace, and I've put it in from an angle. And as I'm running back, and they were top of the league, I think we were near the bottom, it was early.
Right.
I've gone, oops, as I've walked past him, laughing. So anyway, I'm marking him for a corner, and ball's coming, and I've, in football, you ask any player, they know when someone's going to do you, and they know when it's an accident if you get hit. And as I'm heading ball, I've seen him coming at me, elbow, and I thought, I'm going to have to head this, then I'm going to have to shut my eyes, because I knew what's coming. So I've headed it clear, sure enough, boom. I'm laid on the floor, four stitches, and he just bent over me and went, oops. And I was laughing, you know, when you think, oh, that so served me right. So he was quite tough, but that was quite a funny one. And there was a chap, I think he might have been called Gary Briggs. I don't know if it was Gary, centre-half at Blackpool when Billy were manager there. And I played against him the season before in a pre-season friendly because Billy used to bring him to Harrogate Town. And I've levelled him as a centre-half, but he was hard as nails. And he never did, obviously. He's playing a pre-season friendly against a semi-pro. They're not going to kick off. And I remember it's the only time in professional football I got punched on the pitch.
Right.
Oh, it was brilliant how he's done it. So, but I was fuming because he got me. So I've got the ball, and as I've turned, and it was New Year's Day, I'll never forget it. As I've turned, he was waiting. I just turned, and it's just short, jammed straight in the face. And that was so... I walked right onto it as well. And I couldn't get him back after that. I was so annoyed, but I thought, he's stored that one up for me kicking him in non-league football.
Mm.
And fair play to him. But yeah, that was the only time I ever got punched. And the ups one served me right. I was like, oh, that's my own fault.
And just last question to finish off. Just about the role of being club ambassador, how much are you enjoying that? And is it nice to kind of be invited to do that role?
Do you know, I will be brutally honest about this. So I've been not involved in football since I hung up my boots at 40, 41. And I always move forward. And I've done the odd question answers at York, and it's great. But for 20 years, York have never really had any interest in ex-players. And then all of a sudden, they've started bringing back. I've always knocked about, always been involved with Graham Bradbury, because
yeah,
he's always kept the golf days going and things like that. And what they're doing now is, I got invited, and I was absolutely honoured because I only played there for 4 years. But I know, and I say to people, I say, look, I want a great player, but I played in a great team that was the first ever Wembley team. And because of that, we're well thought of. Mm. It's one that I'm one of the better players. I just played in the first Wembley team. And that's, in history of football, it's a good thing to do. So to be invited, I don't involve myself with football. I watch my nephew play, and he's doing very well, and he's at Coventry at the moment. Other than that, I don't. So when I got invited, I was like, well, I've not really been involved in football for that long. And I work with a chap called Matt, and he's an ex-major, and he's a really decent human being. And I put everything past him, and I says, I've been invited to be an ambassador. And before I've said whether I was going or not, he went, what an absolute honour. You don't turn honours like this down. They don't come round in life. you take it as a great thing, and you do it because it'll open up circles for you and it'll show you different things. And as you get older, your circles get smaller and it'll open up. He says, and whether you like it or not, try it for you and see how it goes. And he made my mind up before I even said what you... Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, you're right. So sometimes you need someone to advise you. And I've really enjoyed it. I've enjoyed, as you can tell, I can talk...
We love it, yeah.
Forever. I'll do question and answers, no problem. And, yeah, it's nice.
Yeah.
It's nice that they're bringing the community back to the football club, because it was fractured for a lot of years, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And if you get the community back and you get the football right, you can go where you want to go.
Yeah.
And they have ambition, and the stadium's fantastic. So I see a few on Twitter. I only go on it because my nephew used to go on it and say, have you seen this picture of you, Uncle Lee? I went, no. And I've got pictures of me that I've never seen because of social media. And people saying, oh, Bootham, I remember reading, we're not happy we're leaving Bootham Prison. It's fantastic there. Mm. Everything about it's fantastic. The pitch, the stadium, it's just, and it's all pulling together. And they seem to be bringing everything back. And I hope they get back where they should be. They should be in the Football League. They should be in League One. And the crowds are more than when we played in the Football League.
Yeah, so
bring in the youth. Bring it all on, get everyone involved and see where you go.
Well, thank you so much, Ian, for, you know, we always love it when people come to the studio and do face-to-face. It's been great to see you again and, you know, great to hear some of the extended versions of these stories. So thank you for coming in.
My pleasure. Thank you for your time.
So thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed that first episode of a new series. I could literally have listened to Ian all night. His stories are just phenomenal, and we'd had him down at the Trust Socials a couple of times this season in his role of club ambassador, and always a great laugh, and was always a plan to do a full extended kind of interview with him, and, you know, definitely lived up to expectations from my side. Hopefully did for you guys too. Big thank you also to Nearly Departed, who were the full sponsor of the last series. They're going to sponsor a couple of episodes again this series. Always appreciate them, their support, and like the details were at the start, you know, do download the app. It's for free, and, you know, lots of benefits if you're a York City fan who goes to lots of away games, of which there are a lot of long trips in certainly in August coming up. So coming up on the series, we have got the likes of Gordon Staniforth, John Challoner, Gary Swan, Paul Stevenson, lots of what I'd class as kind of cult heroes of York City, really. Gordon Staniforth, I suppose you could call a club legend, having won the Clubman of the Year twice. But his episode is coming up next week, so listen out for that dropping. This is the first episode we've released since the Matt Oogler episode, and that is how it's pronounced, by the way. A couple of people said to me, why do you pronounce it like that? I asked him how it was pronounced the first time I met him, and that's how he said it was. So I've always kind of continued with that. But yeah, thank you for everyone who's got in touch regarding that episode. I've just had loads and loads of downloads. It's ended up being in the top 12 of the UK podcast charts for football, which is pretty mad, really, for a niche nostalgic based podcast. But, you know, it's great that so many people have got behind it and enjoyed the episode. Lots of ways you can help us as a charity. Donating is the kind of first protocol, justgiving.com/YorkHospitalRadio. I know money's not always easy to kind of give, but you can help us in other ways. Giving us a rating on Spotify or Apple or whatever podcast platform you're listening on. Ratings and reviews are really, really helpful, as is kind of spreading the word. So thanks again for listening, and stay tuned for Gordon Staniforth dropping next week.